the Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Welcome on in. We have a busy show ahead. We have Peter King. I have not bugged Peter this season much, Football Morning in America. I'm not going to ask Peter King to come on every week. And those of you that have seen the show through the years know that I'll have Peter on every week. But I'm not going to have him on talking about the Cardinals and what they've been going through every single week. But I think the time is right. Also, the time is right that Brock Purdy is coming to the Valley this Sunday. The former Queen Creek Perry High School star quarterback, who we've been doing stories around since all the way back his junior year. I think it's fair to have a deep dive with Peter on where's Brock Purdy in terms of respect nationally? Why has it come back to, and they had, Kevin Burkhardt did a nice job yesterday, along with Greg Olson, in addressing it during the 49ers Seahawks game. And that is, yeah, everything's out there about Deebo Samuel and Christian McCaffrey, and look at all the talent that he has at all the positions, Brandon Ayuk, and on and on and on, Trent Williams, and I'm leaving people out. And it's to the point that's where I want to do a deep dive with Peter on where Brock is with Brock coming back here this coming Sunday. And also Kyler Murray, you know, what's going on with Kyler from what he sees and where Kyler's future lies if it's not here in Arizona. So Peter King will be with us. We're also going to get in a little bit about the Chiefs last night. I know Peter's probably doing the circuit today, doing a whole bunch of shows. I'm not going to tie him up too long on that, but Peter King. John Wilner is with us, our weekly conversation, Wilner Hotline, none better, covering Pac-12 football and the college football scene. The proposal that Charlie Baker, the head of the NCAA, put out last week about reform coming and how there will be a place for $30,000 for every single athlete, not just football. I want to talk to John about that. Also, I think it's crazy to try to be a college coach when it's letter of intent day next week. NIL is going on. Visits are going on in the portal. You have bowl games going on. How do you actually do all this stuff? And so we will talk with John Wilner about that. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their support. There's been some news that has happened this morning on the college football scene, and I wanted to have Jordan Hamm jump on in right off the top because it's breaking news even as we speak that Arizona State has landed a quarterback. And so I asked Jordy to get in. I'll get into the other stuff here shortly, Peter King at 10:20, and all the other news and notes, but this is breaking news because Arizona State, Jordy, lands a quarterback. We'd figured Jaden Rashada was the guy, but now he's not, or is he the guy still? And Borgay is still in the mix. So a quarterback comes here. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I think regardless of what was going to happen, whoever the starter is, Kenny Dillingham made it pretty clear they needed to address the quarterback depth and make sure that they were ready to go. So Sam Levitt of Michigan State, entered the transfer portal, played four games as a freshman last year. So he maintained his redshirt status, but is a guy that won a state championship in Oregon at Westland High School, has kind of bounced around. He was at up in Oregon in high school, went to Utah during the COVID year to when there were so many questions of what state was going to play high school football, what wasn't, and then returned to Oregon and won a state championship his senior year. A dual threat guy, had about 800 rushing yards his senior year and 8 scoring touchdowns. And this is, I think the situation right now is we haven't heard publicly one way or the other if Jaden Rashada is coming back or if he is entering the transfer portal, but regardless, that quarterback room needed to be addressed. Drew Pine is in the transfer portal. Trent Bourget said he was coming back. Trent Bourget has suffered his fair share of injuries, so I'm not sure where his health is currently, but they needed to make sure they were adding talent to that quarterback room. So if it is a case where Jaden Rashada does move on, then you have somebody who has some game experience between Bourget and Levitt. And then if you have Rashada does come back, it's a quarterback competition. And, you know, that's one thing that Kenny has never shied away from is even if you're the best player, like you're going to compete for your spot. So I think that's where we're at in the quarterback room right now.
Are you surprised by this?
No. I think
Rashada's leaving, Jordan?
I think it's probably a coin flip right now. I'm not, I think going, it's tough to gauge going through what him and his family went through in Florida. We always heard about the great relationship that him and Kenny had. And that even when Rashada tried to commit to Kenny back at Oregon, he said, "Hey, take a beat, go make sure this is the right spot for you." He ends up going to Florida. Kenny gets the job at Arizona State. Like, they have a very strong connection. I don't think anyone anticipated how bad the offense would be this past year. And a lot of that was due to injury. I guess the, maybe not how bad, but how wrong things could go within the offense. So I don't think we got a true gauge of what Jaden Rashada can do. I don't think we got a true gauge of what this offense is capable of doing. So there are some questions out there, and you only have so many years to go, you know, get on the field, have tape to show to the NFL, and also go make some money. So I could see it going either way, honestly. But at least publicly, everything we've heard is they still have a great relationship. Everything is good. But as we saw with Warren Washington, with Devin Cambridge, they are committed until they aren't. And so that's the thing with this transfer portal. It's all the articles I'm writing is, as it currently stands at time of publish, this is the quarterback room. This is the linebacker room. This is what it looks like, because things can just go sideways very, very quickly and situations can change.
All right. Good job. I'll let you go off that. Thanks for jumping in on the stream. Yep. Jordan Hamm there for a couple of minutes. So that story is gone on. I thought the big news over the weekend, there's a couple things. The Shohei Ohtani deal, and I've been steadfast on this, Ohtani's people reached out to the Diamondbacks because Ohtani was interested in what was going on over here. That doesn't mean that they were ever going to put a bid in on him, but Ohtani's people reached out to the Diamondbacks. I thought our industry took a black eye on Friday. Everybody, you know, it's our deal, because so many media companies are under the gun to try to get their number of clicks every day. And I'm just like, I'm going to do my own thing and I'll worry about that as I go, but I'm not going to ever sit there and say, well, he's on a plane going to Toronto. You don't go wrong on that. So our industry on Friday, everybody got their click counts in. None of it was right. Just dumb. And then Ohtani decides to go on his own Instagram and put himself in a Dodger uniform. So he handled his own PR. I kind of like that. What does this mean for the Diamondbacks in the National League West? It means that the West will be really interesting. The seven games that the Dodgers will play here, it's always charged when the Dodgers come to town. There's always the beat LA thing. But it will be even more so. And when you try to pitch through a lineup that's got Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts, and Ohtani in the first inning, you have to be sitting at your TV set, which is good for business. You have to be in your seat. You can't show up in the second or third inning. You know, and at the same time, I love what the Diamondbacks did in addressing their starting rotation and signing Rodriguez. So I like where things are. I do like where things are. I find the baseball team over here to be doing it the right way, because here's the thing. If you're a Dodger fan today, all it takes is one injury and you are screwed. And he's had two Tommy Johns. So the pitching side of it, okay. Big Babe Ruth's going to come up. I got it. And that's great. But for $700 million, is it really worth the investment? Will it pay off long term? You can say all day long, because that's what fandom is. Fandom is just not reality. It's just fandom. Oh, we got it all figured out. Okay, let's see. Speaking of fandom, Patrick Mahomes yesterday, that was so uncharacteristic. And I would have to think that today Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid would walk up to a podium. And I'll talk to Peter about this in a couple of minutes, Peter King, and say, man, we were way over our skis. We overreacted. If you're a Chiefs fan, please don't even try to explain how offside that was. Okay? Everybody's talking about that today. Photo doesn't lie. We all try to find ways to, oh, well, you know, the referee, and they don't even call it that much, and you lost, okay? The Chiefs have not done a good job after replacing Tyreek Hill. The Chiefs receiving core is a problem. Tony Romo had every right to just crush them. Here's Patrick Mahomes just kind of, they're with Denver. Like, Chiefs fans are Chiefs kingdom. Touchdown, Kansas City. Yeah, all the nonsense. Got it. your team is in trouble. And I would think that just stepping up to a podium and saying we're wrong would not be the worst thing on the planet. It's very hard for people to accept that, though, in this day and age. Brock Purdy is coming back to the Valley this week. I watched Brock yesterday surgically take apart Seattle. I saw Brock Purdy. Yes, he has very good weapons. We'll talk to Peter about this. He has very good players around him. But he's 53 weeks now into being the starting quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers, and he is back here in Phoenix this coming weekend. The Cardinals are coming off of a bye. They have 4 weeks left, 4 weeks to figure out if Kyler Murray is their guy or not. In my own humble opinion, the general manager and the head coach already know. They're just going to say, we don't know, and we're evaluating, because that's what they do. That's what they do. I watched a lot of college basketball, and U of A looks well beyond the number one seed, but let's just be honest here for a moment, shall we? Does it really matter what U of A does in December? Because if I sit here in March again and bring up a Sacramento game from last year against Prince, oh, you're so unfair. No, I'm not. It happened. Oh, you're a hater. No, it happened. It happened. So you get all excited all you want. And I love the fact that U of A has played such a great schedule. You know, and U of A fans just conveniently pass by what President Robbins is saying about their athletic department. It's like, oh, we have no problems. We have the number one team in the nation. We don't care if we're in a hiring freeze or if we lose people because they can't find a quarter of $1 billion. Nice job there. GCU wins again. GCU wins again, and they win. You know, usually the WAC is one team. It usually is. And I'm not going to sit here today and say that it won't be any different this year, but I would wonder if GCU, because of the victories they have, they didn't beat South Carolina. South Carolina is really good. You beat San Diego State and you win at Liberty, and Liberty had a 20-game home win streak. Those are both quad one victories. Is their resume going to be strong enough that you could take a second team from the WAC? I doubt it. I doubt it, but you never know. The Suns will have Bradley Beal maybe tomorrow night. Mercury get the third pick in the draft lottery. I was very disappointed with that. I wanted Caitlin Clark here. Love what Caitlin Clark is doing in college basketball for women. And that's that. On the other side, Peter King. All things around. We're going to talk about the Chiefs a little bit from yesterday and what he saw. But Brock Purdy coming back to the Valley for the first time. And what does he make out of Brock as the quarterback, not just with the 49ers, but throughout the NFL? And then John Wilner, Wilner Hotline on Charlie Baker's new proposal in the NCAA. I'm Brad Sussmat. So let's talk about goodwill for a moment. And when I talk about goodwill, I mean it from the heart, and I also mean it from my head. When I will go around the house, now that we're empty nesters, when you have four kids like we had, and our youngest just went off to college, for some reason through the years, shoes get stacked up. When I talk about shoes, I'm talking about athletic shoes, dress shoes. But our kids, boys and girls, I've got cleats, like lots of cleats, and wrestling shoes, and basketball shoes. From when they're itty bitty and there's just bags of them that I've taken. When you have four kids, it's all the time, it feels like. And there's other items, too, that we're finding around the house now that we're cleaning things out. And we take them to Goodwill. Goodwill is where I go. It is nearby where I live, about a mile one direction for one Goodwill. Another one over in Queen Creek on our way to our church. Another one right down Power Road. It's very easy. You pull right up. They give you a receipt. You're taking care of others. You're helping others that are not as fortunate. Wherever you may be around Phoenix or the northern part of the state, look into Goodwill. Find Goodwill. Take your items. Donate them. It makes others' lives simpler and easier to help them out, especially during this holiday season. That is Goodwill. Football Morning in America, Peter King is with us for a few minutes, and Peter's column today, The Flag Heard Round Kansas City. I'll probably be the only show you do today that we don't go in depth about what happened yesterday in Kansas City, unless you're just like, Brad, I got to get this off my chest, because I'm looking at Brock.
No, not really. I mean, you know, Brad, it's one of those things that Kansas City's ox was gored. So they're going to be really upset by it. But I don't know how you look at that play and say it's not a foul now.
Right.
What is interesting is 10 years ago, I did a story on a week in the life of an officiating crew. And during the game, early in the game, and I mean like the first couple series, there's a lot of communication between the members of the officiating crew and the and players and coaches. But I remember it was Gene Steratore's crew. At some point in the game, you stop talking and just you officiate. Now, evidently, because Kadarius Toney doesn't play all that much, evidently, I've heard nothing about anything that he had a conversation with, say, the down judge, who's got to be the official who throws that flag, or the ref, or anything, nor Andy Reid, obviously. So I don't know. I think once Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, I mean, honestly, Brad, the game last week where on Sunday Night Football, Marquez Valdes-Scantling got absolutely mugged and there was no pass interference called. And it just reinforced the idiotic feeling that, okay, in the last 2 minutes, it's like an NBA game. You don't call anything, which I have been told 1,000 times that will be a markdown for the official. That will cost that official a playoff game, most likely, you know, because it happened at a huge time and, you know, they should have made that call, didn't make the call. Anyway, bottom line is, I can't get too fired up about it for Kansas City, even though both those guys are great guys. I mean, Mahomes, there's no better guy for the NFL than Patrick Mahomes, but he just went bat crap when it happened because, look, their season is, I'm not saying it's blowing up right now, but it looks like they, I mean, Brad, today's December 11th as we record this. The Kansas City Chiefs have a one-game lead over the Denver Broncos. What universe are we in exactly? So anyway, yeah, I think Kansas City had a bunch of reasons to not be very happy after that game.
Peter King, Football Morning in America. You can read his column, great news, great notes. He releases it every Monday. He joins us for a few minutes. Peter, Brock Purdy is coming to the Valley this Sunday.
Wow.
And I think it's about time to do a deep dive on the hometown kid. I've been doing stuff with Brock since he was a junior at Perry High School and know the family. Wow. Sat with the family last year when he got injured in Philadelphia at their house and took it all in and sat with him as the phone call came in from John Lynch and all that stuff. So I've seen this story. I'm at a point where I have to wonder, is he ever going to be that player that gets 100% respect, or will it always fall back to, and maybe I'm too close to the situation, will it always fall back to, well, he has Deebo Samuel and he has Brandon Ayuk and he has Trent Wood. He has all this talent and it's really not about the kid. As he comes back here on Sunday, I want to throw that at you and just what do you see out of him? I know you've talked to him. I've seen him in your column. But what do you make out of Brock Purdy?
I think he's a tremendous football player who got great, great, great value out of playing and starting 46 games at a Power 5 school. And as important as just starting the games, I know this is going to sound crazy, played for a mediocre team. That helps because he's seen it all. He's had multiple times where he's been in adverse situations and had to go and play before 95,000 people as a huge underdog on the road in Norman, Oklahoma and Austin, Texas. And and so he understands that football isn't easy, that nothing is handed to you. So I think he has a great appreciation for where he is. And look, I've said this almost for the last year because I covered his coming out party, his game against the Dolphins 53 weeks ago when Jimmy Garoppolo went down with the foot injury and it looked like they were going to have to use Brock Purdy for the rest of the year. Now, I'll just say that, you know, I remember specifically after that game, Kyle Shanahan was not thinking that our season is over because he had seen Brock Purdy run the scout team and play a lot in practice And, you know, he would basically be feisty there against guys like Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw. And he would, you know, he'd go back and forth with them. Like, I don't care who you are. And you, I'm not going to act like the last pick in the draft. I'm here to beat you today. And that's just always who he's been. And Brad, the thing I'll always remember when I first met Brock Purdy was after that Miami game. And I said to him, and you, I'm sure you'd recognize this because you know him. I'm sure his family would recognize this and say that's Brock. But I said to him after that game, I said, you will start your first game ever as an NFL quarterback next Sunday in this stadium. And on the other side of the field from you that day is going to be Tom Brady. So what do you think of that? He goes, hey, cool. He's been playing football longer than I've been alive. Just very matter of fact and all that. Yeah. I just want to say two things about him as a player. You don't throw the ball downfield with as much accuracy and confidence and it'd be a fluke or it'd be, oh, it's because of the system. Okay. So Kyle Shanahan has great weapons at his disposal without any question. Would he be as good without Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk? No, no way. Obviously. Would Tua Tagovailoa be as good without Tyreek Hill? No. Would Patrick Mahomes be as good without Jason Kelce? No. So that's the way it is. What makes me crazy is when people are resistant at changing their original thought on, you know, on players. And there are just too many people out there. I'm on a talk show in San Francisco every week with these guys, Willard and Dibbs. They're good guys. They're huge 49er guys. And they talk about how the national opinion on Brock Purdy is shaped in part by what they call draftism. You know, that you can't escape the box of being the 262nd player in the draft. And look, took Tom Brady a long time to escape his box of being the 199th player picked in the draft. But I hate to be a cliche here, Brad, but all Brock Purdy can do, he can't stand there and say a word. Words don't matter. Actions matter. Every Sunday in the NFL, he is proving that he belongs, and he belongs in the absolute upper echelon of NFL quarterbacks.
When you see him play Peter at this stage of his career, as you put it, 53 weeks in, who does he remind you of?
I mean, his mentality really reminds me of Brady's. The only thing that he's he's different than Brady because Brady was an absolute taskmaster. And maybe Brock Purdy will get to be that way. But Brady was the most pleasant guy. When the game ended, you're talking to him. Hey, it's great. You see him on the sidelines and during games, and he'll bite people's heads off if they're not doing the right thing. But, and I, who knows, maybe Brock Purdy will get to be that. But I think he reminds me of Brady in terms of, I don't care what anybody in the outside world thinks. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily pay much attention to it. And if I do, I laugh at it because it has absolutely nothing to do with who I am as a person or player. Brady once told me, it was after Goodell suspended him for 4 weeks in the Deflategate thing. And I said, why'd you choose to appear with Goodell after winning the Super Bowl, smile with Goodell, shake his hand, you know, take pictures with him? And he just said, I'm not going to give away my power to that guy. I'm not going to let him think, in essence, that he controls me. And so I think, and look, Brock Purdy is Clark Kent. You know, he just is. He's just this mild-mannered dude. But all I know is that there are some people who are made to play this position because nothing fazes them. And they can put bad news in the rearview mirror in 1.3 seconds. And that is so far anyway. We'll see.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's what Brock Purdy reminds me of.
I'll shift gears. Peter King with us for a couple of minutes, Football Morning in America. Before I get you out of here, Brock is here, as mentioned. the Sunday against the Cardinals. I've left you alone this year because I just think bringing someone on every week and saying, so what do you think, Peter? What do you think, Peter? Like, it's been a train wreck. It's been a cluster bleep out here. There's no other way to put it. But I've seen a few moments, Peter, and I think Monty Austin-Ford is the right guy, and his draft strategy last April was smart. And this year they've got two picks in the first round. They've got to decide about Kyler. Gannon has come in, and it's his way or highway somewhat mentality. What do you make out of the Cardinals from a distance? I know you're not watching every last piece of them, but just from a distance this year.
You know, I think they still have a decision to make on Kyler Murray. They may say publicly, I'm sure they'll say he's our quarterback of the future, because that's what you have to say.
Right.
But you aren't in the position that they're in very often. You're not in the position when there are some good quarterbacks coming out to be able to pick one and a more standard type NFL quarterback than Kyler Murray. Monty Austin-Ford didn't pick Kyler Murray. Jonathan Gannon had nothing to do with Kyler Murray until he walked into the building with the job and met him while Kyler Murray was rehabbing. That's so, I mean, they're not married to him. And, you know, although the contract is slightly onerous, if they wanted to get out of it, it's not horrible. So I think the way I would look at it is this, Brad. I think the last 4 weeks of this season are really valuable for this franchise. There are two teams in the NFL who in the last 4 weeks of the season, they're not going to the playoffs, but these are vital games for them. One is Arizona with Kyler Murray. Two is Chicago with Justin Fields. Each of those franchises has a huge decision to make because you're not going to be in position, you hope, every year to be able to get one of the great quarterbacks to come out of college football in a while. I have my questions, about the USC quarterback. I don't think he's faced much adversity. And when he hasn't looked so great. And what's going to happen when you go to a bad team? You're going to face adversity probably every day for 2 years. Look at Bryce Young.
Let me jump in.
He's on the verge of being ruined.
Anyway, go ahead. Yeah, let me jump in on that. So in Caleb Williams' case, when he runs to his mother and he cries, which he did.
I don't care. It's okay. Yeah. That's okay. Really, honestly, Brad, I don't care about that. That's totally fine. Sometimes you have a weepy moment. I'm talking about just the collection of things. You know what I thought was lousy? He knows that he's not going back to USC. Don't tell me I'm considering this. He's not going back there. So at the end of his last game, a crushing disappointment, he says, I'm not talking to the press. Now, some people would say, who cares? I don't care whether you talk to the press. And honestly, I don't think it's a huge deal, but it's just a bunch of issues like that. And look, I don't cover college football. I don't watch a lot of college football. I talk to a lot of people in the NFL. There are some in the NFL who think that Caleb Williams is the second coming of Andrew Luck and then some. And there are some who are worried that he's an entitled kid who they have some questions about, not necessarily as a player, but as a person, just in terms of his attitude, work ethic, all that stuff. So we'll see. But the one thing I would say, Brad, is I covered the USC Colorado game.
Yeah.
Deion Sanders, it was when Deion looked like he had everything going on in the right way. Right. But anyway, what was interesting about that day is that Twitter blew up that day when Caleb Williams rolled to his left and threw a ball probably 50 yards in the air to a receiver who caught it, rambled in for the touchdown. Everybody said, oh, my God, what a play, Caleb Williams. So, and I forget the exact number, but he had like 7.28 seconds to make that throw. And in the NFL, the average time between you get the snap and you throw is about 2.4 seconds. So quite honestly, the worst quarterbacks in the world should be able to complete a pass downfield if you have 7.5 seconds. And so that meant nothing to me. I don't think it really means anything. And so it's this kind of stuff. One of the problems, Brad, I think with judging quarterbacks is is that narratives are made and nobody ever challenges them, you know? And so that's why I think if I look, I'm just telling you right now, I don't know about Kyler Murray. I'm not positive about him, but I can tell you this. If I were the Chicago Bears and I had the first pick in the draft, unless Justin Fields really doesn't look good the last month of the season, I am very much in of the mind that I want to take that first pick in the draft and trade it for three ones or more, maybe three ones and a player. I don't know, but I don't want to use that on a quarterback. You know, Chicago historically is the franchise where quarterbacks go to die. And we have one right now who looks like he's the genuine item. Why throw him away? So anyway, that's my thought. And I think that is what Monty Austin-Fort and the Cardinals have the next month to decide.
Yeah, and just one last thought. What does your gut tell you about Kyler in Arizona? Do you have a feel? When you talk to people around the NFL, it's he's gone or they're...
I don't think people know. I mean, I haven't really taken a temperature very much on him, but the people, I was talking to some people about all quarterbacks around mid-season, and I think they thought that Monty Austin-Fort was going to be an open book on Kyler Murray. And I'm sure he is. Why wouldn't you be?
Right.
There's no reason not to be. And I think Kyler Murray has his future in his hands over the next 4 weeks.
I appreciate your time and insight as always, Peter. Stay safe. Thanks.
Okay, Brad. Thank you.
Football Morning in America, Peter King. And we're back with more after this timeout. John Wilner is with us, as always. Wilner Hotline, you can find John on X at Wilner Hotline. He has a Canzano Wilner podcast. He is everywhere. And the thing is, college sports never sleeps because, John, we have the number one team in the nation now in basketball for the Pac-12 that's supposed to be dissolved, that's going to be dissolved. So the embarrassment continues. We have that. We have Jaden Daniels, I think a surprise to you and I, winning the Heisman. And I want to talk about life work balance and how there is zero for coaches this time of year because we have the portal, we have NIL, we have letter of intent day, and we have bowl games. So where do you want to start, John? Which one is in your wheelhouse, John?
There's no balance for sports writers either.
That's right.
and we don't forget legal affairs, right? And I think we may get a little bit of news this week on the state of the lawsuit between Washington State, Oregon State, and the other 10 schools. And the only reason that that's relevant for the other 10 is that money is potentially involved in terms of wintertime financial distributions that the schools usually get. And I certainly know there's at least one school in your home state that really has a few financial problems these days.
Let me just jump in on that. Okay. So the U of A, for President Robbins now to just make it sound like the sickle is coming in this week to clean house. If you're a U of A fan, your program's an embarrassment right now financially. There's no other way to put it. The president this weekend pretty much gave everybody notice, right?
He did. And first of all, starting at the top level there, I'll be curious to see if the president keeps his job. I have to imagine the Arizona Board of Regents is a little bit unhappy with how this whole thing has been handled, right? I mean, this is not just a $50 million in athletic department unpaid COVID relief. This is $250 million. And I'm very curious to see how the whole thing plays out. We'll see. It sounds to me like they're going to try to, instead of laying people off, just, you know, basically a hiring freeze. So not replace folks who leave. But yeah, we'll see how it plays out. It does look very, very bad for the school financially, but while Arizona is thriving on the field and on the court in the two schools that produce the revenue, right? I mean, men's basketball is ranked number one. They're going to stay number one after pounding in Wisconsin. Football was, 14th in the final CFP poll, and now they get Oklahoma. You know, Arizona is one of just a handful of schools that is ranked in both football and men's basketball. Texas and Tennessee are the others. There may be one more. Texas and Tennessee have much bigger budgets than Arizona. So it's a real credit to them and the coaches and the hiring process that they're thriving in those two sports. But boy, it is a mess on the money side.
Okay, so let's go back then to Oregon State and Washington State and what may happen in legalese this week that could impact the bottom line of certain schools. What may happen, John?
Well, so the Washington Supreme Court, the deadline for briefings on the latest chapter is Tuesday, it's tomorrow. The Supreme Court could lift the stay that's currently in place, which would then allow Washington State and Oregon State to take over the board and basically control the entire conference, in which case, you know, they could make some decisions financially. The conference, you know, we talk about how, you know, the conference gets hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. That is not all paid out at one time at the end of the fiscal year. That is paid out in increments throughout the sports season. And I think we're coming up on a payment date that usually provides a little bit of cash for the schools. And I don't know. We'll see what the support, what the court says. If they lift the stay, will Washington State and Oregon State allow the payments to go through? Will everything get clogged up so the schools aren't getting their mid-year relief? I don't know. But we may get some clarity this week on how things are going to go.
On Wilner with us, Wilner Hotline, for a few minutes. You and I are on the same page on the Heisman Trophy. I had Michael Penix 1, Jaden Daniels 2, and Bo Nix 3. I was very surprised at Jaden Daniels, but the voting is really, I don't know, balanced. It's not balanced. It's more East Coast and South than it is out here in the West, right? I mean, that's really what it came down to.
There are five of the six voting regions are either entirely east of the Mississippi or basically touch the Mississippi, right? So the far west region is the Dakotas to Hawaii. Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico, they're all part of what's called the Southwest region that includes Texas, right? Texas is SEC country, Big 12 country. So it's really, it's very difficult. Well, and then you add on the you know, the time zone issues and the kickoffs. It is very difficult for a Pac-12 player to win the Heisman unless you start the season with a ton of coverage. Now, I don't know if Penix qualifies, but look, in the last 50 years, there have been, what, 5 Heisman winners from the Pac-12. 4 of them went to SC, right? Because SC gives you the platform that everybody on the East Coast knows SC. The only other one was Marcus Mariota, the Oregon quarterback in 2014. He was the preseason favorite, right? So he had a huge platform and name recognition ahead of time. You know, Michael Penix, at one point he was the favorite. He had a few subpar games down the stretch. I voted for him because I thought winning mattered, and he made all the big plays for a team that went 13-0 and finished second in the country. Jaden Daniels' team lost 3 games. They were 2-3 against ranked or against opponents with a winning record, right? I don't know that Daniels elevated his team the same way Penix did. You know, Penix played in a monsoon. Penix played while he was vomiting on the sideline against Stanford. Penix faced one ranked team after another down the stretch. I thought he deserved it. I don't have a problem with Daniels winning. I think all three candidates were worthy, but yeah, I thought Penix, you know, he won the big games.
Let's go over to balance. Okay, so December has become this month where anybody, and sports writers too, but anybody who wants to get into the business of coaching, how can you be a head coach and be successful in this day in this day and age, John? I mean, how really can you do it? And when you have the portal and you have recruiting coming up and you have NIL and you have bowl games, how can you do it?
Yeah, and you're changing jobs potentially, right? Because this is the season for firing. The coaching carousel is in full spin, right? I think it's very difficult. And I think you're seeing more guys get out and leave for the NFL. I think that they will change the calendar. That is a huge priority.
Gotta happen.
Pardon me?
It's gotta happen.
It's gotta happen. It's got to happen. The big thing would be our early signing window, right? Which is now 3 days before Christmas. I think this year it's the 20th to the 22nd, 21st to 23rd. That needs to get moved to early January. And I think that they are taking a look at that, but they have to change the calendar. The transfer portal is here to stay. And they have narrowed the window. It's now like basically early January to early December to early January. That's not going to change, but they got to change the early signing date. And I think part of the motivation for that is next year we get the expanded playoff. So for 12 teams, for 8 teams that are going to play first round games, you know, this week they would be preparing for first round games. Right now, this week, a few teams are preparing for those very early bowl games on the 16th. But this is going to be a playoff week, and that's going to even make it crazier. So they got to change. There's no way they can change the firing cycle. The transfer portal is not changing. The playoff is coming in the second January, Saturday, December. They got to change early signing. I think that's the one that'll move to January. But it is insane, and it affects everybody because – it forces schools to make decisions on their head coaches during the season. There's a lot more pressure to make a change during the season than there was before. And we see more in-season firings than we ever did before.
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying makes sense, but you know, how do you do that? And then you still have the late transfer portal window too in late April, early
May. Late second half of April.
Yeah, and so it never stops, and it doesn't stop for the kids. And I don't understand really why you have to keep adding periods. You know, the idea of signing in August and then the coach gets blown out doesn't fit anymore. Having two signing dates, the one in early February, what's the point of that one now? If you're going to go, you're going to go in December.
Yep.
High school kids now, even more than ever, are getting left out just thinking they're going to get big offers to go to college because you're better off going. Look, you're really better off going to a Division II and FCS and getting on the field and play now if you're a high school kid, unless you're the highest of the highest of the highest end. Just go to Northern Arizona University and they're going to be a AAA baseball program. You're going to go there, you're going to get on the field, you're going to get tape. Then you can go or go to Indiana or maybe even Arizona State. Go to some programs that are below the top 50. And that's the way to go, John. It just feels like this whole thing is still up in the air. It's not just going to be a magic wand.
Well, that's true. And it'll be interesting to see the impact of NCAA President Charlie Baker's proposal, right? And that's probably something we should touch on. This is a radical proposal that went public last week. And it basically would create a subdivision. There's 133 teams playing major college football, right? The FBS. Now, that's basically divided into the Power Five and the Group of Five. It's going to be the Power Four and the Group of Six, basically, next season once the Pac-12 breaks apart. He is proposing that a subdivision within the FBS be created, and it would be for the richest schools. You'd have a $30,000 per athlete buy-in. Basically, you would have to set aside this educational trust fund, $30,000 per athlete.
Every athlete, not just football. It's
not just football. It would be half. It's designed to meet Title IX requirements. So it is half of the athletes on scholarship at your school. So let's say you've got 400 athletes on scholarship. 200 would have to get $30,000 a year in an educational trust fund. Well, that's $6 million. That's a pretty steep buy-in. You would also have to be required to do name, image, likeness deals with your athletes. So that's millions more. So all of a sudden, we're talking about $10 million or more buy-in to this subdivision. Well, the big football schools will do it. Most, if not all, of the Power Five schools would want to do it. The other piece is that subdivision could create its own rules with scholarships. It could create its own calendar with recruiting and transfer portal and all that. It would have a lot of autonomy that would separate it from the rest of the NCAA, because the rest of the NCAA people, it's easy to forget, there's multiple divisions. There's 2,000 schools in the NCAA. Right now, the same basic governance structure for Alabama applies to Alabama State. It makes no sense. So the subdivision, and we'll see if it gets passed. It'll take a year or two, I'm sure, to get through the legalese and the governance process. If it gets passed, the schools in that subdivision would be able to create a football calendar that potentially works a little bit better for coaches and their lifestyle and their personal lives.
Well, and wouldn't you have the relegation system of soccer too? That's what I've heard, is eventually we're going to get to a point where there's 50. If you want to be in that top 50, you got to keep your program competitive and get to the upper end. So the Vanderbilts of the world, the Indianas of the world, the Cals of the world, Arizona State right now, you're not going to be in it until you get your act together. Is this the same type of proposal, John, do you think, from Charlie Baker?
No, well, I think that the relegation promotion system that's based on European soccer, to me, that is 8-10 years away. I think that comes, there's two steps, right? If they get this NCAA proposal passed, that'll help create this subdivision of 50, 60, 70 schools, right? But then we're going to see a second split in 8 or 10 years when the next cycle of TV contracts are signed. That's going to be the Super League. That's going to be the true mini NFL. That's going to have 24, 32, maybe 40 teams that are totally separate, that are only playing each other, that have probably funding from private equity to support this, that are making the big dollars from TV, and then you're going to have everybody else. And I think, frankly, if you're looking at the current Pac-12 schools, to me, USC, Oregon, and Washington are probably only ones that would make that Super League, because it's going to be really based on TV ratings and who ESPN and Fox are going to pay for. I mean, right now, right, just take the Big Ten. Fox and ESPN are paying $1 billion, or Fox, CBS, and NBC, I should say, are paying $1 billion a year for the Big Ten. They're really paying for Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State, plus USC and now Oregon and Washington, right? I mean, they're not even paying for UCLA or Wisconsin or Nebraska. And they're going to get tired of doing that. The networks, you know, there's going to be the changes in the bundle, the changes in viewer consumption. They are going to place a premium on eyeballs and what works and what's worth spending money on. And it's really only going to be about 24 college football teams are going to be worth that money. So I think they're going to create this Super League, and everybody else is going to play what kind of like is now the group of five. It's going to be the group of 70 schools, and they're going to make some money off TV, and they're going to play each other. But there's going to be this mini NFL in college football. Now, to me, that's again, 8 or 10 years away. This NCAA proposal for the subdivision is a little bit of a bridge to that point. The NCAA is trying to get ahead of these lawsuits that are going to cost it billions of dollars. And that's, I don't think they're going to be able to get ahead. I think those lawsuits are going to hit the NCAA no matter what. So it's a kind of a complicated web of multiple layers of evolution of the sport over the next 10 years. And the NCAA proposal is really the first step.
That is a lot.
It's a lot. And if you know, and I know this is on the website, right? But right before the Pac-12 championship game, I kind of laid out my vision for what the Pac-14 would look like in 2033 with Utah beating Stanford in the first Pac-14 championship game. And it gets into some of this, because at that point, USC and Washington and Oregon are in the Super League, and the Arizona schools and Stanford and Cal have come back to the Pac-12 in a regionalized conference, because the Super League has been formed and everybody else has to reconfigure. So it's on the website for folks who want to go take a look.
It's good. No, it's really good. Before I get you out of here, who do you have, Purdue or Arizona? Saturday's big time, John. I love it. 1 and 2.
Yeah. Arizona's schedule, by the way, over the next 2 weeks, I think it is. Fantastic schedule. One ranked team after another. It's awesome that they do that. I got Arizona. I think they're playing great. Purdue can be had. you know, Arizona's got the size to contain Edie. So I like the Cats. They're playing fantastic. But at the same time, I mean, isn't Arizona going to be judged on March after what happened last season? To me, the pressure on Tommy Lloyd is all about getting out of that first weekend of the NCAAs. I happen to think his lineup is better equipped this year to deal with the NCAA tournament than it was. I think guy like Caleb Love, that's who you need in March. But they're playing great right now. I think they'll beat Purdue.
Good stuff there. I'll let you go off that. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
John Wilner, and that's a lot. And yes, you can go read his columns up on the website at sports360.com, and we're back with more after this timeout.